University of Colorado.
As the total deaths from COVID-19 in the United States hovers near 500,000, it's important to note that some 16 million Americans have recovered from the virus. A recovery can take a great deal of time and can be difficult. Today on See You on the Air, we're talking about a groundbreaking tele-rehabilitation program for COVID-19 survivors. Our guests from the CU Anschutz Medical Campus are Jennifer Stevens-Lapsley, Professor and Director of the Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Sciences PhD program, and Christine Erlinson, Associate Professor of Infectious Diseases. Welcome, ladies. So we're living in a Zoom remote world right now, and it should surprise no one that various aspects of medicine are virtual or via Zoom or the internet, and rehabilitation for COVID patients is one of those things. So, Christine, perhaps you can tell us how this program came about.
Sure. So I'm an infectious disease physician and got involved with COVID quite early on in terms of seeing patients and helping to develop some protocols, working on clinical trials. And as part of my clinical work, we were seeing a lot of the devastation of COVID in the hospital. We also had a lot of medical students that were looking for projects and willing to help out. And so with a few medical students, we started calling patients once they were discharged from the hospital to check in. We were really struck by the amount of shortness of breath and weakness and just inability to get back to baseline function among many of the patients discharged with COVID, even among middle-aged or younger adults. And so with some prodding from one of our mentors in geriatrics, I reached out to a colleague, Jen, who's a physical therapist, and we'd both worked indirectly before and put our heads together to think of how we could really help patients get back to their baseline function faster, particularly with the unique limitations that COVID imparted.
And Jennifer, your expertise is in rehabilitation. What are the differences you're seeing? And I know you're at this point seeing both telehealth patients and some patients in person, but what are the big differences other than the obvious?
Well, the big differences are truly the complexity, especially of some of the younger individuals that are affected by COVID. We traditionally in rehabilitation are used to seeing medically complex patients that require a myriad of approaches to care, but we have not traditionally seen as young a population affected by breathing and simple activities like walking. Their endurance is significantly reduced, but at a much greater level than you would expect just with a typical hospitalization. So it's a very unique opportunity to try to figure out how we can get people back on their feet faster.
And the program's called Predictors of Recovery, and the app facilitated tele-rehabilitation or AFTER for COVID survivors. So how has the program developed and grown as you've gone along?
We started enrolling about a month or so ago, so we're still sort of in the early stages. It took some planning and creativity in ways to identify patients and to get them the equipment and the tools that we needed. So we're still in the early stages right now. We'll continue to grow as we get feedback from our participants and see what happens with COVID in the next few months as well.
And Jennifer, what are some of the things that are specific to the telehealth portion of this?
Yeah, so some of the unique elements of this program involve pushing the envelope with respect to making sure the intensity of rehab is adequate in order to progress patients as quickly as we can, but also a biobehavioral portion of the program involves an emphasis on empowering patients to be able to do their own rehab in the future and adhere to the exercise program. So we meet people where they are. Each individual has a unique set of limitations that they're faced with. And we use this biobehavioral coaching to not only identify what those limitations are, but to teach them to problem solve and be able to advance their own programs now and down the road. The other piece that's unique about the program is we have a unique web-based platform that was created by Blue Marble Health, and it involves a home exercise component that has avatars and other ways to help facilitate adherence to exercise. So the therapist can monitor what a participant is doing at home and then provide feedback and coaching during the regular physical therapy sessions. That is one unique addition to tele-rehabilitation that not all programs would normally have.
And so, like a lot of things in our lives nowadays, there's an app for that.
That's right. That's right. An interactive app.
Interactive app. So how does it interact with people?
So the app actually has avatars. So these basically figures that actually perform exercise with the participant. So they demonstrate the proper technique. They go through the exercise with the participant at the appropriate speed. And they basically serve as a visual reminder of what the person is supposed to be doing for any given exercise.
And so what are some of the most common things we're seeing, Christine, as far as symptoms and what patients are dealing with?
A lot of fatigue. I think COVID's been a very tiring disease, partially mentally. I think people go into this just with some COVID fatigue. And then if they actually have COVID, it's just a profound physical fatigue following the infection. A lot of weakness, shortness of breath, a big hit to endurance. People that could usually go out and run a couple of miles without a problem find that they have a lot of difficulty even going for a walk around the block. Certainly some respiratory symptoms, cough, shortness of breath, wheezing. And then we see these strange COVID symptoms with the loss of taste and smell. A lot of people describe kind of a brain fog or their confusion, and they feel like they just can't think quite as clearly. And then I think there's a big hit to mental health. People are in the hospital by themselves. They're in a room with isolation. Nurses and physicians are coming into the room with masks on and in intense protective gear, and I think patients feel alone. Once they get home from the hospital, oftentimes their friends or their family might avoid them for a period of time, appropriately for quarantine purposes. But then I feel like some of that continues for a while. People outside of their household may be concerned about getting COVID from them. And so I think there's a profound sense of isolation that continues well beyond the initial infection period.
And how do you get them through some of those mental health challenges?
That's a great question. I think connecting them to other people that have gone through the experience has been really beneficial for some people. They hear other people's experiences and know that they're not alone. I think getting back into the medical system, exercise can be a great stress reliever, and having that one-on-one interaction with the therapist through our program, I think, has been really helpful for some people. Also, just encouragement that they're not going through this alone. That other people have the same symptoms, if they can connect to social media groups or other types of groups to hear the similar experiences that other people are going through, I think that can be really reassuring to some folks.
And we talked about the medical community is learning so much about COVID, about its effects, about treatments. And I would imagine that through this telehealth, you're learning a lot about how you can refine these things. Can you talk a little bit about what you're learning along the way?
One of the challenges with this population is that you don't have hands-on opportunities. And so you can't physically evaluate muscle strength, or you can't catch a person that might be at risk for falling. And we have to be very careful about the types of things we do and the ways that we perform the rehabilitation so that we ensure that safety is the utmost priority. And so we've developed a lot of strategies and techniques to make sure that indeed patients are not at risk for falls and patients are able to complete the program in its entirety. Technology is another barrier. So figuring out and making sure that the pieces that we give participants a tablet and we give them a Fitbit, and making sure that those interface appropriately and that the learning curve is reasonable is an important part of the success of the program.
We've all learned a lot about how we can do research and how we can do medical care in unique ways. And so just with this study in particular, we've learned not all patients are going to have the same equipment at home. How do we get equipment to patients to complete the study in a safe way without them having to come into a central location to pick things up? And so we've had to be creative of ways that we can monitor patients at home and get them equipment in a safe way in terms of COVID. And I think it's also important that we're reaching out to populations that may not have some of those technical abilities. And so we've attempted to try to encompass in some of at least our telephone follow-up questions for patients, ways that we can just use the telephone. So can we assess how they're doing with their function via the telephone? So thinking outside the box, are there other ways that we can involve participants that perhaps don't speak English or can't use the technology to still assess their function and keep them engaged?
Yeah, we're seeing some of that with getting people the vaccine and some technological barrier. So I hadn't thought about it in this regard too, but that seems like that's very real. Who are the people who you see in the program? Is there a typical patient?
So far, there's not really a typical patient. It's wide-ranging in terms of physical activity capabilities. Usually there's some deficits, certainly in mobility and function, but quite a range of individuals as young as 40 all the way up to, you know, the upper ends, 80, 90, are eligible to participate. I think our upper limit is 100. So quite a range. The other important piece of this program is that we're able to attract and engage individuals in rural settings. And so this is a unique kind of opportunity to start to really provide services to people who otherwise wouldn't have access to the same services. If they had to drive 3 hours to get to their rehabilitation appointment, they wouldn't necessarily be able to do that on a regular basis. And so we're able to reach some of those underserved populations.
University of Colorado has remarkable researchers who are on the leading edge of exploration and change, whether through environmental or business studies, or through healthcare advances in space exploration. CU's impact reaches throughout Colorado, far into the solar system. Do you know of an exceptional faculty member who you'd suggest for CU On the Air? Email us at ontheair@cu.edu. That's ontheair@cu.edu. Given the vaccine, there's obviously hope for all of us, but I think that folks like you all are going to continue to see a large number of people. Do you see this thing scaling up?
We do. I think the understanding of how to treat patients with telerehabilitation from a distance that are medically complex is something that's going to apply to many, many other populations down the road. The traditional telerehabilitation approaches that have been used to date have largely been done in outpatient orthopedic settings or settings where patients are more mobile and more independent. And so our understanding of how to provide services to this much more challenging population is going to allow us to treat a variety of different patient populations down the road.
And are there costs to patients?
For this program, no, everything is free. We provide a Fitbit for participants. We provide a tablet that they have the app pre-installed. And we also provide them with some basic equipment if they don't have that already.
And how many people are in the program?
So we are hoping to recruit a total of 60 people to participate in the program.
Understanding that no two patients are alike, there are some common things that you are recommending for patients. Jennifer, what are those?
So we focus quite a bit on muscle strengthening because one of the key components that we see from hospitalization is profound weakness. We also do a bit of endurance training and a lot of physical activity coaching. So we give individuals a Fitbit to monitor their physical activity in the form of step counts. And we use that information to gradually increase their physical activity. We also do some balance training and some other types of things that help individuals return to their normal activities of daily living. And we can't discount the importance of mental health and just checking in to make sure that individuals who are recovering from very profound illness are adjusting to their new circumstances and their new lives post-COVID.
People recover at varying levels, but how well are people recovering through this program?
So there's a variety of responses to any exercise program. There's genetics that are involved in actual physiologic recovery and muscle mass and muscle function. And in addition, motivation plays a huge role. However, even some of the most motivated individuals struggle to recover from COVID and the symptoms associated with the weakness and the endurance and the fatigue that we see in these individuals. So it's not just about motivation, but that's certainly always an important component of any exercise program.
I'd imagine some people are with you for a short time, some people for a longer time. Is there a typical time frame for treatment?
Because this is part of a research study, we do have everyone on a set time frame to see how much improvement we can elicit during this specific time frame. So we have participants in for 12 weeks that we're following their improvements. And then we set them up with the skills to continue to exercise past that point. But our specific hands-on engagement is for 12 weeks.
Christine, you mentioned before that you have some funding from the National Institutes of Health, and this is a research study. What's the time horizon on the research study, and what do you expect at the end of it?
So we're hoping to have all of our participants enrolled by May pending enrollment and how the cases of COVID do in the hospital setting. And then we would hope to analyze the data towards the end of the summer. What we'd like to see is that telehealth is feasible, that it's safe, and that we can have some improvement in our participants. We don't know a lot about the best ways to help people improve after COVID, whether early exercise or later exercise is better. And so we hope to learn some more information about the types of exercise that can really help people feel better, as well as the timing of exercise.
So you're dealing specifically with COVID patients right now, but this might have applications far beyond this one specific disease. Can you each talk a little bit about what those may be?
Sure. I think that the most important aspect of what we're learning from this population is how to be creative and flexible in terms of problem solving, whether it's a technical problem or whether it's a specific exercise to meet someone's individual goals. And being able to standardize care, but yet also be flexible in the specifics of how we administer that care is an important balance to strike. And this work will inform much work to come in terms of how to treat some of the more challenging populations, especially older adult populations who are struck with many similar types of difficulties and impairments.
I've learned a lot from this work in terms of how we can improve exercise interventions. We have a hard time getting patients to be able to come into a physical gym 3 times a week. I think the time, the travel, the expense of trying to come in. And so this has taught me a lot about monitoring safety and how we can introduce exercise and just more physical activity, particularly for participants in rural areas that may not have access to a gym or aren't able to come to the research center. So I think just in terms of improving physical activity in the broader population, this can have a huge impact.
I'll ask you both this. So tell our listeners a little bit about why you got into the field you're in. None of us expected something like COVID, but how it has affected your career trajectory. And Jennifer, I'd ask you first.
Sure. My research has focused entirely on improving mobility for older adult populations, and so really trying to optimize care for the individuals that we know very little about how to progress rehabilitation or optimize the rehabilitation. And so while COVID affects individuals who are far outside of the spectrum of older adults by traditional kind of definition, we see similar patterns. And so the translation of our prior work into this population is a very logical fit to really push the envelope and try to adapt these programs to meet the needs of these medically complex populations.
Christine?
I'd say my work has been impacted in a few different ways. In my clinical hat, my inpatient clinical service has drastically changed in terms of the patient population that we were seeing through a lot of the COVID pandemic, where it was primarily patients with COVID instead of routine hospital infections or things that we typically see like the flu and pneumonia. From the research standpoint, unfortunately, a lot of my research was very in-person based, and so a lot of that's been on hold for the last 6 months. At the same time, I think it's made us think more creatively about how we can do research. And one of our research studies that was supposed to be in person converted to virtual. And so I think it allowed us to test new types of interventions. How well can we do some studies virtually? And gave us an opportunity to think of different directions. I certainly wouldn't have become involved with this study and worked with Dr. Stevens-Lapsley if it wasn't for COVID at this time.
And as researchers, is this exciting, terrifying, both? How do you view it from the research perspective?
I would say that we're probably just as tired of COVID as the rest of the population is. There's certainly some exciting aspects. I hope that some of the things that we've learned from telehealth and telerehab can be beneficial down the road. I think that none of us were expecting that telehealth would take off quite this quickly, even though we've all sort of imagined it in the medical setting for years. I think it certainly was terrifying in March. Many of us were very concerned about coming into work and coming home and spreading COVID to our families or spreading it to neighbors and friends. I think as we've learned more, it's become a little bit less terrifying, but it certainly still has the fear factor, and I'm ready for it to be over.
I would certainly agree with that. You take the opportunities when they present, but given the alternative, we would have rather not had COVID appear at all. I think I've been most struck, though, by the impact it's had on patients who have said to me that out of their many hospital experiences, this has been the worst experience of their life, and that this is the most terrifying experience. So these are individuals who have had open heart surgery, have had multiple orthopedic surgeries, all sorts of other experiences. And they say hands down that the experience they had in the hospital and recovering early after their hospitalization was the most terrifying experience of their life. And I think that's, you know, the opportunity there to kind of address those needs has been what has really excited us about trying to meet patients where they are and improve their circumstances.
It's a pretty strong statement about the most terrifying for them, considering some of the ordeals they've gone through.
And it's a very consistent statement. It's a very interesting pattern that people have consistently said to me, especially when I see them in their homes for the first time after they've gotten out of the hospital.
What do you say to people who minimize this?
COVID is a wild card. I think if you knew how you were going to respond, you would rest assured that maybe you were one of those people that was going to have mild symptoms. But there's a wild card factor here, and we don't understand who is going to be hospitalized at the age of 21 and who's going to be fine at the age of 85.
So we will have some information in the show notes about how people can apply to be part of your research study, but what advice would you offer someone who wants to be?
So we're recruiting participants that are age 35 and older, and were recently discharged from the hospital with COVID infection. That's pretty much it. We would like to help people get back to their baseline of function and would be happy to hear from people that think they might be eligible or interested.
Individuals interested in the study can also go online at movementforeveryone.com, where the four is the number four. So movementforeveryone.com. They can also call 303-724-9590.
Dr. Jennifer Stevens-Lapsley and Dr. Christine Erlinson, thank you very much for being here with us today, but more so, thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu. Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold. I'm Ken McConnellog, and we'll see you on the air next month.
University of Colorado.